Hello, everybody. This is Charles with the Barbershop Group Podcast, and hopefully you guys are having a wonderful Friday today. I wanted to mention something to you all that happened a few days ago. As some of you know, I have to do drug screenings here and there, and I was making a house call to one of the clients, and an interesting thing happened.
The client was inebriated. He was quite drunk and he was having an argument.
He needed to kick his girlfriend out without much of a conversation, without explaining details. He put all of her clothes in a clothes basket and and told her.
He told her he had to pack up her things and that she had to leave.
I was listening to this back and forth. I learned that the young lady lived about an hour away from his house and that she'd been staying with him for probably about 9 months or something like that, and that they'd known each other for about 2 years. It seemed to me that he owed her some type of explanation, but he gave her absolutely none. And you could tell by the young lady's face that she was extremely hurt and surprised and just completely distraught by his decision. But, you know, as I listened and listened closely, I heard something, or rather I didn't hear something that I should have heard. While she was upset, she was willing to engage this man and try to figure out what was going on in his mind. She really just wanted some answers. She wanted him to open up and talk to her. But he refused to do so. He played the tough guy. He told her she had to leave, that he would explain everything later. And then he changed the story again. And I'm standing there waiting to do this drug screening. And I'm thinking, you know what? This guy's getting ready to drop dirty right now. But so I did what I had to do. But I was really, really concerned about this young lady who this guy said he was involved with. And today I'm going to talk to a very special guest who specializes in chemical dependency counseling and in marriage and family therapy. And today we have on the show Whitney Hawkins out of Miami, Florida, who is the CEO of Collaborative Counseling there in Miami, Florida. Whitney, are you there? How are you?
Hello, I am. It's good to be here.
Yes, it's good to have you. Thank you for joining us today. So Whitney, you know, this is what you deal with all the time. Both the chemical dependency, the addiction, as well as, relationships. And I was thinking about something that you and I spoke about previously, and it came back up after my engagement with this guy. I'm thinking about, what is it with men that just makes us so avoidant when it comes to like dealing with arguments or some difference of opinion or some conflict in our relationships? I mean, the guy just kicked the girl. It seems like she told me the day before the argument that they were out at dinner. Everybody was fine. Everybody was happy. And he just decided, you know what? We're done. You need to leave the house. And there was no explanation. And it's not just that guy that I'm concerned with. It seems like there are a lot of men who are just completely avoidant when it comes to conflict resolution in their relationships. Do you see that a lot?
Absolutely. So I think what you're talking about right now, unfortunately, is not an isolated incident. In terms of men sort of giving the silent treatment or shutting down, I think this happens for a variety of reasons. So one is, you know, based on your history, how were you raised? Were you taught to talk about feelings at home? Could you share your feelings with people? You know, if we think about it, if you would cry when you were a kid or try to tell someone how you felt and all they would do is be like, shut up, man up, get it together. Mm-hmm. If that happens to you enough times, you're not going to keep sharing your feelings with people. Yeah. So that's one factor. Another thing I think about, you know, being silent is that it's sort of a protective factor, right? So there, you know, me sharing my feelings might scare me more than me just getting rid of you or being quiet, you know? Okay. So in this situation that you're talking about, it really could have been that for this guy, you know, sharing his feelings with her and being vulnerable was really painful for him, you know, was something he just wasn't willing to do.
Yeah.
And it's, I think a lot of it relates to how we were raised, what we're taught to do. And as men, that's definitely something pervasive, right? This whole man up culture, be tough.
Right. Yeah.
don't share your feelings.
Right, right. This, yeah, you're not crying. You're not going to complain. If you complain, or you're going to sound like a whiner and
right.
and things like that. So no, yeah, the man of culture. But so, I guess my question to you then is, what do you do when you recognize that you've grown up in a type of man up family or man up culture? Like, how do you reverse this process? Because a lot of people are saying it's got something to do with the way we grow up, but okay, so we know that now. What's the next step?
Right. Totally agree with you. So, you know, you're right. What do we do here? I think this is when it really comes down to what are we doing in our relationships? So as women or as partners, we need to be receptive to the fact that, you know, if a man comes to you and says, you know, I'm not really good at this. This isn't something I've done before. Okay, you need to be willing to have those conversations and to learn what that looks like for you as a couple, because every couple fights. There are always going to be disagreements. I don't care what anybody says, there will always be disagreements. And I think silence is really one of the biggest relationship killers. So being open, being willing to have those conversations, and also just teaching men ways to start these conversations. So saying like things like, you know, I don't really know how to say this, or can you help me here? I've been wondering how you feel about this. Opening the door for those types of conversations, I think, is really important.
And so what do you say to a guy? What do you say to a guy? So just, I want to jump in really quick before we get too far off. What do you say to a guy who's like, well, okay, Whitney, yeah, I do want to say something to my partner. I do want to say something like, hey, I don't know how to talk about this, or can you help me? But he's so scared that his partner is going to, you know, make him feel like, you know, a wuss, or make him feel like he's, you know, less masculine, or make him feel like he's incompetent. What do you say to the man who is apprehensive because he's just so responsive to what his partner is going to think about him?
Mm-hmm. You know, the first thing I would do is reassure the person that, you know, this person, if they love you and care about you, they're probably not going to meet you in that way. And just because one person has reacted that way to you in the past does not mean that everybody will. And it really takes practice. It's like ripping off a band-aid. I also might ask them, you know, has your partner ever shared vulnerable feelings with you? And how have you responded to that? You know, do you think that they're a baby or that they're complaining? And 9 times out of 10, they're probably going to say, no, I listen to them. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Got you. So It does make sense. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we're trying to help men understand is that you don't actually have to communicate. And I hate to say this, but you don't have to communicate the way that a woman would communicate per se, because, you know, guys worry about sounding like a woman. But, you know, it just seems like there are so many guys who just avoid conflict, you know, altogether. And not only do they avoid conflict with their intimate partners, it seems like a lot of guys actually avoid conflict with people generally.
Sure.
You know, I say that when it comes to men, all we know is win or lose, you see. We don't know compromise and cooperation. We know win or lose. It's like, what do you... And if I'm going to win it, I'm going to go all in. But if I'm going to lose, I'm probably not going to do it at all.
Right. And when you think about
how do you change?
I mean, I think the silent treatment feels like you're winning, right? Because most of these conversations will just be like, oh, no, we're done. Shut up. Conversation over. But nobody's winning. Everybody's losing. And I think, you know, there's this idea that in order to have a healthy relationship, you need to have 5 positive interactions for every 1 negative interaction. And so I think when you think about it in terms of, you know, a man that really wants to have a good relationship with their spouse or with their partner, that you got to give sometimes and to say, like, this is how you're really going to win. This is how you're going to get what you want in the long run, is to be a little vulnerable and to be a little bit willing to kind of try something that you haven't tried before.
Yeah. So you said something about, for every negative interaction, you have to have 5 positive interactions.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's like John Gottman is the person that I rely on a lot of the work that I do with couples, is a lot of his research. And there's this idea that it takes about 5 positive interactions to make up for 1 negative interaction. And so couples are still having negative interactions, but they're healing from them and they're having positive interactions, you know, to make up for that.
Got you. So that's, and that's something that has to be practiced quite often. I don't think you can do that in a week and be done.
No. That is a lifelong journey.
Yeah. So, so I mean, when we think about these, you know, you're looking at 5 positive interactions versus the 1 negative interaction. Just, you said it's a lifelong thing. So there's not like a timeline, or there's no, but it's just everyday practice.
Absolutely. And I think it's getting the same with learning to open up and be vulnerable. It's each time you do it and you get a reward for that behavior, you're going to want to do it more. Right. So, you know, if you're vulnerable emotionally and your partner responds really positively to that, you're going to want to do it again.
Yeah. So is it okay to like say, and I mean, I'm just, I don't know, speaking for guys, some guys maybe. So is it okay for me to expect some type of reward because I've shown my partner my vulnerable side?
I think that, you know, determines what you think of as a reward. and we're thinking more long term here, relationship satisfaction than necessarily getting a instant reward right after you're vulnerable.
Okay. Yeah.
Might happen in some relationships, but I cannot speak for all of them.
Okay. Because I've seriously had some people come to me. In fact, I've had women come to me and say, hey, you know, my husband or boyfriend, he shared something that was very intimate, very vulnerable. But then he turned around and he said, hey, can I get laid? And I was
exactly.
Oh, yeah. Because I mean, there are guys who were like that.
Sure. Absolutely. You know,
and so I'm thinking, well, I don't know if that's exactly the kind of reward we are looking at, but I don't know. And I know that some guys will think that, you see. So in terms of this whole man up thing, I don't know if you're willing to say so. You know, a lot of people are hearing a lot about toxic masculinity today. It's a big tag. And a lot of men don't like it because a lot of men feel like it's changed just any type of masculinity. But when it comes to the, you know, men's inability to like be vulnerable or running from conflict, do you think that this is one of the characteristics of toxic masculinity at all?
You know, when I hear toxic masculinity, I think of it in terms of not necessarily, I think of it more like systemically. So toxic masculinity in terms of how we're treating women, how we're treating other people. I don't know that, I do think the man up is toxic. But are you saying is being masculine toxic or?
Well, and that's what I'm curious about. You know, right. I personally think that there are some issues of masculinity that are toxic, that present themselves as problematic within societies around the world and here in the United States. But I'm very careful when I talk to men because I don't want men to feel like walking into the door, they're bad. Like, you're a bad big guy.
Right.
You see? And I think that a lot of guys actually feel that way when they hear the words, you know, and I think that it impedes progress for some men who may actually be considering, you know, who may be looking at themselves going, you know what, I want to change something, but I don't feel like I'm a toxic male, but I just want to change some stuff about me, you know? Sure. And I feel like maybe some of those guys, they turn and run the other way as soon as they hear those two words put together.
Right. I agree with you. And I think sometimes when we make these labels, it can be kind of negative sometimes. Because the truth is that men and women can have problems with, you know, sharing their emotions or being vulnerable or crying. Right. This isn't just a man's problem.
Right.
And so I can see how, you know, it would be sort of off-putting that if you do some things that are considered to be masculine, you know, that you are seen as toxic.
Yeah. Yeah. I recently was reading an article that one of the board members sent me, and it was about someone came up with 10 books to replace 10 classical books that were toxic. So they were talking about Wuthering Heights. They were talking about Alexander Dumas and a book that he wrote, and like 8 other books that were toxic that people should not read. Read this instead. And I was like, well, I don't know if we want to go that far. I mean, now you're labeling fictitious characters in classical novels that were written in a different time, in a different place, for a different group of people. You know, just maybe we should let some of this stuff settle, okay? Let it be where it is and deal with some of the real issues that guys are feeling or expressing right now, you know? But I could be off.
No, I mean, it sounds like you're saying let's focus on what's really important right now, what we really need to focus on.
Yeah, I don't think we need to focus on Emily Bronte.
Right.
You know, that's just... I mean,
there might be more pressing issues, I guess.
Let me tell you, and the only reason that I am familiar with that is because I had to take a romantic literature class in undergrad. If it wasn't for having to take it, I wouldn't have known about these people. Right. Anyway. You know, so why, you know, Alan Watts says, you know, he said, you know, the only way that muddy water calms down is you don't stir it up. And I'm like, well, are we stirring up something that doesn't need to be stirred up right now?
Sure.
Okay. Going back to what you were talking about, the homes of men, where they experience childhood. I talk to men all the time who are now waking up realizing that maybe they didn't have the best childhood. And so one of the things I want to ask you about is, once a guy wakes up and realizes that he didn't have the best childhood, maybe dad wasn't there, maybe mom was crass his whole life or whatever, like, how can he effectively get through this when he has a family, Whitney, now he's married, you know, he's so far down the line. Mm-hmm. How can he address this stuff without, I guess, re-traumatizing himself and just being full of anger?
Sure. So that, you know, I think that's obviously always a big concern for people, especially before going to therapy. Like, do I really want to open up all these old wounds that I might not even know are there? Yeah. And so once somebody has the realization of, like, maybe my childhood wasn't so good, I think that there's, you know, a couple of directions that you can go with that. For some people, they might realize that they actually have some trauma. They really need to go get some help from a professional in order to work through that trauma. And I always recommend that in those cases. For people who are kind of just having this, like, sense of clarity, I think it's okay to really process this with a counselor or with a friend, with another family member, maybe a sibling, and say, you know, did you realize what was going on? And get some closure. Even talking to your parents, if they're still around, can be helpful, because a lot of parents have, you know, when they look back, they're able to see, I did the best I could with what I had, but maybe I would have done things differently.
Right.
And the biggest thing I think would be, you know, if you have the benefit of having a family now and having children, is saying, I feel like this about my childhood. What do I want to give to my children that can be different and better?
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I read an article recently. You know, we also do some things on our social media talking about fatherhood. And one guy wrote an article and he said, I didn't know what the hell I was doing as a father, and I kind of still don't, right?
Right. Sure.
And I think it's important that guys are able to try to have some of the conversations if their parents are willing and present, and if not, be able to talk to other people who may have parented children or who are in those mentoring roles or you know, leadership roles, just to get some clarity. It doesn't necessarily have to be only your parent that you speak to, but we've got to be willing to talk to someone if we want to impact our children. And what I find is a lot of guys who have children, they aren't really thinking about their children's health because they aren't thinking about their own. They're not going, wait, I don't want my child to go through this. They're just kind of winging it. So we want to encourage guys to stop winging it.
Right. You know? And, you know, I think this goes back to the conversation that we were having of breaking the silence, you know, and sharing with people how you felt about your childhood, so that there can be changes in conversation.
Right. Yeah. And that's a big deal. I think that, and I hate to sound like, I don't even know what the word is, because I refuse to use tags and boxes, but, you know, I just think that a lot of us guys don't do the best job communicating. We prefer silence. And, you know, I think that there are a lot of topics that we don't communicate well about. I really do think so. And one of the other topics, one of the other issues that I wanted to kind of bring out that we've not touched on a lot so far as an organization with what we're doing is, I want to talk to you a little bit about, or talk with you a little bit about gun violence and mental health illness, you know, because personally it's bothersome for me to, I'm not a very political person. And I say that in previous podcasts, I'm a bit of a Zen Sufi kind of just free flowing guy, you know, but it's bothersome to turn on the TV or read an article where we have a gun shooting, we have mass violence again in America, and you've got people who are blaming the guns, and then you've got people who are blaming the mentally ill, and they just go back and forth. And I'm like, oh my goodness, but what does this do for the people who are truly suffering, right? And it just, it drives a knife in me. It really does, to know that they're turning it into this polemical, political thing while the people who are truly suffering are not getting the help that they need. You know, so I wanted to just ask you about this. Can you just talk to us a little bit about, you know, the difference between mental wellness, mental health, and mental illness? And just dispel some of this stuff, because in my mind, you know, not everybody who commits mass violence is mentally ill. In fact, the majority of people, and a lot of folks don't know this, the majority of people, once they go through all of the evaluations and things like that, very few people are ever found to be truly mentally ill on a large scale. A lot of people don't know that. In fact, there are still states, many states throughout the country, who the courts don't even really take the evaluations of psychotherapists and psychologists and psychiatrists into consideration when they are doing their deliberations in court. A lot of folks don't know this, you know, because whether it's CNN or it's Fox or CNBC, they don't tell people that.
Sure.
So can you just talk to us about what's really real with mental illness and violence?
Absolutely. So, you know, you're right that the majority of people with mental illness are nonviolent. You know, there has not been any research to show that there has been this really strong correlation between people who commit violent crimes and people with mental illness. And you touched on a really important point, is the difference between mental health and mental illness. And this is something I realized through all these reportings, is that people have been using these words kind of interchangeably, and they don't mean the same thing.
Right.
So when you think of mental health, you can think of it like your physical health. Everybody has mental health, right? We all, you know, are going to experience highs and lows throughout our life, depending on what we go through. Same as someone has their physical body. They could break a bone, but it doesn't mean that they have cancer. So mental illness is a diagnosable condition where someone has to meet a set of criteria, and they've got to meet that criteria for a certain period of time. There's a lot of things around that. And so that would be like somebody who gets diagnosed with an actual, you know, physical illness.
Right.
So somebody who has some issues with their mental health, it does not mean that they have a diagnosable mental illness condition.
Right.
The biggest issue I find here with, and I'll speak on this issue from a mental health perspective, is that in this reporting, you know, they're using mental health and mental illness interchangeably. We're describing these people as crazed and, you know, using all these words, and then in the same breath saying, but you should get mental health treatment.
Right.
And no one wants to identify with that person.
With that, yes, that's right.
Right. So if you tell me I have to go to the same place that this person that we're calling crazy and violent and awful, I'm not going to go, because I don't want to identify with that person. And we're really like comparing, you know, apples to oranges here, and going about this issue in such a way that just, to me, does not make sense.
Right. Yeah. And it's, you know, I hate to be on soapbox, but I have to say that, you know, in my working in residential treatment facilities, for example, you know, several of them. Like, you know, a lot of the younger people or young adults that we saw who were prone to violence, it wasn't due to depressive state. Okay. That's not, you know, the violence that they were acting out with was largely in response to their environments, the things that they grew up around, mm-hmm. you know. And when you think about it that way, now you're definitely not willing to say that everybody that they grew up around was mentally ill and thus violent.
Right. And you make a good point, because some of the only like contributing factors that they've been able to find across the board for these mass shootings is people who were isolated. They were bullied, mainly white males. I mean, there's a lot more factors that have shown up in the research than mental illness.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. You know, and it's just, I wanted to really, I couldn't wait to talk to you about it, because I know that it's a thing, you know. And you wrote the article several months ago about it, and it's just, it's something that a lot of people are afraid to discuss. And if they do discuss, they only know how to discuss it in the ways that they have been shown. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to take the opportunity to give the audience a chance to maybe start having the discussion in a different way, you know, and instead of the talking heads that they have been listening to, and the uninformed people who they're referring to as experts who are not really experts, you see. Sure. So yeah, that's important. Now, you know, the one of the things that you mentioned when you talked about them being white males and coming from environments of isolation and having other things go on. Now we're being made aware of this. What are they calling it? Incel. So involuntarily celibate guys who are, I guess we had one of those in Canada or something like that. But you know, it's not to really, and I never make fun of any individual, but I'm actually very concerned, Whitney. I'm very concerned. You know, what can we do, to reach out to white males who may be feeling ostracized now, who may be feeling like people aren't listening to them, that they aren't being validated, that, you know, nobody really cares. I mean, because when you listen to these individuals, if you go back into the histories, you hear a lot of neglect, a lot of abandonment, and a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. And even as I talk to adult males who are white, once I get them to open up, they're really talking about huge levels of fear that they have been struggling with for a long time. So what are some of the messages that we can give to white American males who have these concerns?
No, I think the fact that we're even talking about that there are that these men have concerns and they have feelings is a great place to start. The best way that I think is to lead by example, to be willing to share, because then other people will sort of respond in the same way. But there have been a lot of these great suggestions in the media, you know, following these incidents of be kind, reach out to people. And these are all really great things. Mm-hmm. But we have to understand that this is a systemic thing that's coming from how these people are being treated within their families, at school, at work. There's a lot of places where we need to close the gap.
Right.
So I think as individuals, you know, we can be kind and we can lead by example and we can start these conversations, but we all have to be doing that. We can't put the burden on parents, all on mental health providers, all on teachers.
Right.
You know, we all have to play our part in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I totally agree with that. I think it has to be a concerted effort. And again, this is, you know, I could sit here as an African-American male, I could sit here and poke fun at the guys now, like, ha ha. No, it's not about that, really. And because I know that there are people who do that, you know, it's not about that at all. It's look, I realize that, you know, the fabric of America is changing. Roles are changing. Mm-hmm. Everybody's questioning everything. You know, things are moving so fast. Information is all over the place and it can feel very threatening and it can cause you to be in a place where you don't have the greatest headspace. And we just want to let everybody know at the barbershop group, we want to provide you with the space to you know, to get back into that homeostasis, back to good headspace. You know, and if that means talking about some very, very difficult issues, bring it out. Let's deal with it, you know.
Sure.
So, Whitney, I'm glad that you said that. We're running short on time now. As I said earlier, guys, in the beginning of the interview, Whitney Hawkins is a psychotherapist out of Miami, Florida, and she's the CEO of Collaborative Counseling there, the Collaborative Counseling Center there in Miami, Florida. Whitney, if they wanted to reach out to you, how could they reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. So my website is definitely the best place to find all the information about me. It is collabcounseling.com. You can also find me on Instagram at sitwithwit. And yeah, you can find any way to contact me there, email, phone, etc.
Yes, she is on. She is also on Facebook as well, guys. And as you know, with each one of our therapists that come on the show, we make sure that we get all of their information out there for you. So as you are listening in the app, you can actually dial their number or go to their website right from the app. You guys know that the Barbershop Group is all about providing resources, both in print and physical resources, meaning we put you in touch with the people who you need. Okay, so don't be ashamed to reach out to her and give her a call. Okay, and Whitney, if I'm not mistaken, sometimes you have a special where you do like a small or short consultation with them in the beginning. Is that true?
So I offer all clients a free 15-minute phone consultation. You can sign up for one through my website and schedule it right there. It's very easy.
Awesome. Hey, guys, you know what? It doesn't get any easier than that, okay? It really doesn't. So as I said, guys, you have been listening to Whitney Hawkins on the Barbershop Group podcast today. If you enjoyed what you heard today, you can go to www.patreon.com/thebarbershopgroup and make a contribution to us today. Follow us on Instagram and on Facebook. We put out a lot of articles, inspirational quotes, a lot of information for you guys, and we've got some special things coming along really soon. So having said that, we hope that you guys enjoy your weekend. Have a great day.
The Barbershop Group provides safe spaces for men to discuss issues of well-being and mental health. The Barbershop Group also serves as a resource to the community, providing consultations and public speakers through partnerships with attorneys, mental health professionals, family agencies, religious institutions, and other advocates. In the near future, the Barbershop Group seeks to renovate dilapidated residential and commercial properties in urban areas to create respite shelters for displaced men. We will also host mentorship retreats and workshops for young men and adults to foster growth through our Iron Sharpening Iron and our Rebuilding Men programs. In addition, we host a weekly podcast covering issues of mental health, homelessness, financial literacy, education, and leadership. If you would like to be a guest on our show, please email us at info@thebarbershopgroup.org. Visit our Facebook page or call 313-585-9948 for more information.